This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, The Business Station. I'm Melissa Idris with Brian Fernandez and Tan Chung Han, and it's time now to take a look at the business pages today. Some of the top stories include Khazanah's investment in Dubai Education Group, GEMS Manasseh Holdings, and we're just talking about the growth of private education. So this clearly a boost, a show of confidence from Khazanah that this industry is set to grow even further.
Yeah, and this not their first investment in the company. Khazanah's initial investment was made in 2014 via an indirect interest in GEM, basically via its shareholding in Fajar Capital, which is a Dubai-based private equity investor. So in 2014, it led an acquisition with a minority stake in GEMS, and that consortium included Bahrain's Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is Mamtalakat, I hope I've got that correctly, and also Blackstone. Now, following the sale, however, Varki Groups says that it's committed to remain as the largest shareholder in GEMS.
Actually, it's Mumtalakat. Sorry. All right, let's take a look at a closer look at GEMS. Essentially, I know that they are here, as you mentioned, Han. They've got a presence in Subang and in Penang. They've been here for a while.
That's right. So GEMS Education is the world's biggest operator of private schools. Okay, over 250 schools, close to 200,000 students, 176 countries. They are in 14 different economies, employing over 20,000 teachers. So yeah, as you pointed out, they've been here since 2015. But going back to what you mentioned, Brian, okay, since that injection of funds from all these funds like Blackstone and Mumtalakat, they have gone on this global expansion, right? So perhaps Khazanah can get a slice of that pie, a slice of that global expansion story.
But and because of that global expansion, also their financial results are actually quite good. Now, if you look at their full year results up to 31st August 2017, their adjusted earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization was $261 million on revenues of $926 million. So pretty nice margins.
Right, but at the same time, GEMS has been leveraging as well. They have raised about $1.5 billion in loans in a span of about 2 years or so, you know, perhaps to fund that global expansion. But whether or not they can fill up those seats in those classrooms, really swanky buildings that they have there, right? Can they fill in those seats and generate enough revenue to service those loans?
And there was also talk of them going for an IPO and trying to raise about $4 billion. Perhaps part of that was to pare down some of the debt that they've been taking up over the last 2 years.
But maybe that's still, you know, plans for the future.
Rumors of the IPO. Yeah,
yeah. But Han, you know, you spoke to Alistair Bartholomew on The Breakfast Grill. He's the GEMS Education Regional Chief Education Officer for East Asia and Malaysia. And some of the things I've learned while listening to him on The Breakfast Grill is really quite interesting. I hadn't heard of GEMS before The Breakfast Grill, and it was interesting to hear just how much growth potential they have in not just the Malaysian market, but also in the ASEAN market.
There is a saturation here in Malaysia. I mean, I'll be honest with you, saturation here in this country is one of my key day-to-day worries and how we approach that. I think here we have to look at that. That's something that maybe we are going to have to moderate and rationalise slightly in terms of operating at a model which GEMS has not necessarily operated at before but can still operate very effectively here. In Vietnam, there is also some, I think, potential for saturation there. But there are countries like Myanmar, Laos and Cambodia that are very exciting.
So that was Alistair Bartholomew from GEMS Education. So talking about, while there are growth potentials or opportunities in Malaysia as well in ASEAN, he talks a lot about saturation.
That's right.
Saturation meaning stiff competition.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, because how does GEMS, you know, who is a relatively late entrant into the market, they came here in 2015, how do they stack up against the dozens of other private school operators here in Malaysia who have been here for decades, right? You think of the perhaps the Ellis Smith and the British International Schools. They've been here far longer than GEMS. 2015.
And so this is one of the reasons, Han, why they're kind of struggling, because apparently in their Subang campus, they only have 250 students, which essentially is about 10% of their capacity.
Yeah, but I think this year, 2018, that number has grown a bit, I think, to about 300-400. But nevertheless, broadly speaking, despite the saturation, there's still plenty of players who want dibs on the growth in the private education space.
So GEMS is primary and secondary?
Yeah, primary primary and secondary, you know, they've got GEMS Global and also the GEMS, the mothership over there in Dubai. They are the ones who are set for the listing. And I think Khazanah's stake is in the mothership.
Yeah, if you talk about funds who are investing, and as Han pointed out, there are quite a number of players who are interested in this space. Mm. So Equinas has been investing in the education business, both in Malaysia and abroad. So they've parked it under this holding company called ILMO, which consists of everything from UNITA, International University, to Asia Pacific University, right down to basically Tenby International School and Asia Pacific schools. So essentially, they own end-to-end institutions from primary
to... That whole
to,
range.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, they were looking to IPO this business. However, but in May last year, they changed the strategy because essentially they felt that they could not get the right valuation for their IPO. So what they now intend to do to monetize, and because, again, Equinas is a fund, the fund has a finite limit. So what they need to do is they need to realize the value of the assets. They apparently are now going to sell them individually.
Right. So it's not just Equinas. You got Navis as well. They've got investments in, say, Brickfields Asia College, etc. I think, Brian, you also on the Breakfast Grill, you spoke to Paramount Group, Jeffrey Chu.
Yeah. Which was interesting because Paramount is a property player, but they also own KDU.
Yes. So what happens with Paramount, it's interesting. They have two core businesses, property, and they look at education as a core business as well. So they've always had KDU. That's what we all know them as. But essentially, in January of last year, they invested $183 million in cash to buy a 66% stake in Real Education Group. Now, that gets them into the primary and secondary business.
Right. So you see that happening with Taylors. You know, Taylors, you know, you think of them as college, university. They've moved down. They're going to secondary school, primary school, help college doing the same thing, KDU doing the same thing. You know, so they're trying to get those kids in early so that they stick with the brand,
you
know,
I
essentially
tell you,
throughout their primary,
really
secondary years.
It's really such a booming industry. And you can, you know, I can understand Alistair Bartholomew saying that this market is quite saturated. But I do want to point out, though, that given all the interest that's been focused on private education, we're going to be looking at the 10 most expensive international schools in the Klang Valley. That's the topic of our Ringgit and Cents show this Thursday. So make sure you tune in for that tomorrow at 9:30 a.m. So quick plug for that, for all the parents interested in seeing whether this is an option for their kids.
They perhaps weep during the show, like, oh my
it
gosh.
Is, can I just give you a heads up? It is expensive. Guys. Yeah. It's very expensive. All right, well, let's move on to the property sector. Philippines-listed Ayala Land wants to raise its stake in property player MCT Berhad. They're going to raise it above 50%, so 50.19 to be precise. Now, this is going to trigger a mandatory general takeover offer, so an MGO essentially, for the remaining shares at 88 cents per share.
Yeah, so Ayala Land will invest $202 million to raise its stake in MCT from 32.95% to 50, just over 50%, 50.19%. It's acquiring a 17.2% stake from MCT's non-executive director, Tan Sri Goh Ming Chun, and he will see his stake reduced from 27.2% to 10.2% at a takeover price of 88 cents, which is about a 6% premium on yesterday's closing price of 83 cents.
Okay, so a bit of a premium there, but if you take a look at the stock price, it's been on a bit of a downtrend. It listed back in 2015, but it's come down a fair bit since then, right?
Yeah, it has. And also, likewise, you've got, well, actually, on the flip side, Ayala's share price have actually been going up. So when we ask why, right, why is Ayala doing this? There's this Bloomberg article recently talking about how capital investment by Filipino companies are just ramping up. And it's not just the private sector. You've got the public sector as well under Rodrigo Duterte. They're just spending.
Oh, they've got the cash. So sitting pretty on cash, what to do with that money?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, that's why you're getting those really sexy GDP figures coming out of the Philippines. So for example, for Ayala Land, they have earmarked $2 billion US dollars for capital expenditure this year alone. And if you look at how Philippines stacks up against its ASEAN neighbors, they far surpass, you know, in terms of their capital spending, right, they far surpass the rates that we're seeing in Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand, definitely in Singapore.
They also are coming out from a lower base.
It's the Philippines, you mean?
The Philippines,
okay.
Yeah. because essentially, if you look at the infrastructure spend in Malaysia and capital spending in Malaysia versus, say, the Philippines has been underinvesting for over two decades. So they are essentially playing catch-up at this point of time.
And then looking at MCT, though, looks like Ayala is getting a bigger stake in a lighter MCT because just recently they have divested their unit in One City. Now, folks, if you're in Subang Jaya, you know what I'm talking about.
Well, I don't know. I'm not in Subang Jaya.
Come on. Right? Okay. Over there, they kind of, so this One City development kind of straddles the Puchong and Subang area, then UHA 25. The MCT recently divested that whole entity, you know, that's One Sky Park and One City, etc., right? So now, according to analyst reports, MCT moving forward will focus on that affordable housing segment. You know, their units are priced between 100K to about 400K. You know, so they're going after that. And in turn, Ayala will not just get a slice of that more affordable segment in the property market, but they'll also provide it with some bank, right? Or more of a presence in the property sector here in Malaysia.
Yeah, so what happens is they've got a land bank. So why is MCT then attractive, perhaps, because they've got a land bank of about 540 acres, and only 7% of it has been used currently for development.
Well, I'm just curious to know. I mean, the property sector in Malaysia is not all, you know, roses, shall we say. And we've already seen an influx of property players from China coming in, setting up shop here and really flooding the property market with sometimes high-end luxury residences. So is there still space for foreign players to come into the Malaysian property market?
Yeah, so if you look at what Knight Frank says, for example, just to confirm what you just said just now, Malaysia is the third favourite destination for Chinese developers between 2012 and 2016. So the thing is, you've got big names from China, from Country Garden to Greenland. They've come in. And then, of course, we have to talk about the $100 billion US dollar Forest City project. And all of this is really geared towards, particularly in Johor. And as a Johorian, I've seen the whole landscape change. It's all about positioning Johor Bahru as the hinterland for Singapore, very much as how Shenzhen grew at a very rapid rate as a hinterland for Hong Kong many, many years ago. So that could be one of the opportunities there in terms of attractiveness.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I have trouble with that because what does that mean for Malaysians, right? I mean, does that mean inflated prices, house prices for Johor Bahruans, JBians? Sorry, excuse me.
Johorians.
Johorians, not specific to Johor Bahruians. To Johorians, right? Does that mean they have to pay more for property prices?
Well, you see, so that's a disconnect there. On one hand, you have very high-end properties, and then you also have much more affordable properties and different segments altogether.
All right, we've got the 8 o'clock news coming up after this. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.